2 million cancers diagnosed each year in the United States. For instance, almost 200,000 women with breast cancer are diagnosed each year. Now compare that to bone and soft tissue sarcomas, where we only see 10 to 15,000 new patients per year in the entire United States, making it a very, very rare situation. To make it even more rare, there's 175 different bone and soft tissue sarcomas. Each one is a unique cancer, just like breast cancer is to colon cancer. So that's one of the reasons that sarcoma centers are critical for patient care. Sarcoma centers are sites where expertise is found in experience, in research, clinical trials for patients who have sarcoma.
Wow. So if I'm correct, so sarcoma is most common though, which is interesting, I think, unlike most cancers, most common actually children, right?
It's so when you look at solid tumors in children, sarcoma is one of the more common types of cancer in children. With that said, there's so many more adults than there are in our children. So that even though sarcoma is rare in adults, there's many more adults with sarcoma than there are children with sarcoma.
Oh, wow. So sarcomas, so there's a lot of different types. I believe there's, I know like Ewing sarcoma is one, and soft tissue. But I know that I believe you're also a member of the Medical Advisory Board of Sarcoma Alliance, which is one of the biggest, obviously, nonprofits and charities and organizations in the fight against sarcomas. So, like, what can you tell us a little about, like, the specific the Sarcoma Alliance and how it actually works?
Yeah, I would be delighted to. Organizations such as the Sarcoma Alliance are really critical for helping patients get information to identify sarcoma centers and overall to relieve some of the anxiety with this rare disease.
Mm-hmm. And so from your time with the Sarcoma Alliance, like what are ways that you see that people can take part in advocating against sarcomas and where should most of their attention really go? Like where do we need help with?
Well, the Sarcoma Alliance has a number of activities that I believe are helpful to patients. For instance, one of my colleagues here at Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Center, Gina D'Amato, began an educational event for patients through the Sarcoma Alliance called the Sarcoma Exchange. At the Sarcoma Exchange, sarcoma experts from medical oncology, pathology, radiology, radiation therapy, surgery, from all these different areas of cancer healthcare, sarcoma experts come together to give a presentation on the way they take care of patients, different types of patients, some of the common sarcomas like leiomyosarcoma, liposarcoma, gastrointestinal stromal tumor might be discussed specifically, but then they'll also discuss general principles from their fields of expertise. Another way the Sarcoma Alliance disseminates information is through listservs. And then there's also blogs where patients can ask questions of other patients and anybody who's willing to chime in and give some advice from their experience as a patient is welcome to do so. It's a free and open exchange for patients.
Mm-hmm. What are listservs? I know you just said that. What are they?
Pardon me?
Listservs?
I don't know where the listservs are, but there you can join them.
What are they?
Sarcoma Alliance.
Do you know what they are though?
They're like blogs and emails.
Oh, just okay. So just a way that they just basically get information directly to the to people.
Yeah, they have an extensive email list that patients have consented to receive new information about sarcomas. For instance, new clinical trials, newly approved treatments, mm-hmm. and patients can also ask questions through the blogs and portals.
Oh, that's really cool. And speaking of like patient direct patient interactions, I know some, you know, it's very scary telling someone they obviously they have cancer. and diagnosing them with it. So, like, how do you go about telling someone that they have it? Like, and what are the things that you recommend they do?
It certainly is a stressful situation for many, many patients. And, you know, I've found just being open and honest and transparent with patients is really the key. We also meet several times with the patients after diagnosis for not only revealing the diagnosis, discussing the findings, but if they're on chemotherapy, going over the results of chemotherapy, if they're about to start chemotherapy, we'll meet with them several times to go over all aspects of chemotherapy. So so we do meet with patients multiple times because they can't, you know, it's overwhelming sometimes and people can't always process, nor do they ask all of the questions that they intend to ask at the first visit. And then we also work with sarcoma experienced psychiatrists that are not psychiatrists for schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. They're psychiatrists experienced with situations that sarcoma patients find themselves in, dealing with their cancer, dealing with the treatment, but then also dealing with everything else in their life. So it's very helpful to have that as a resource at our cancer center.
Okay, so you definitely, there's a lot of, that's very nice. There's a lot of emotional assistance and both an insurance that they know what they're going through.
We also have, our social workers have arranged sarcoma patient groups.
Oh.
So there are patient support groups for sarcoma patients where they can go by Zoom or they can go in person and talk with other people who may have the same type of rare cancer as they do. And then we have a specific group called adolescent and young adults. There are many resources for children under 18 that are diagnosed with cancer. Mm-hmm. And there's also a lot of resources for adults. But the adolescent and young adult group aged 15 to 39 often falls in between the cracks. And, you know, a 21-year-old just diagnosed with cancer doesn't want, you know, it's a little awkward for them to be in the same clinic with a 5-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And then also at the same time, a 21-year-old with 60-year-olds is also a little awkward at times. So we've developed this program at Sylvester called an adolescent and young adult program that really caters to younger individuals and their needs because they're worried about other things than young children and older adults. For instance, they're going to live longer, so they can have longer term toxicity, such as infertility from chemotherapy or radiation therapy. They can also experience thyroid problems, heart problems, can lose calcium in the bones, such as osteoporosis, and all of these other situations that may not be applicable to the very young children and the older adults.
So if you don't mind me asking, so there's definitely a comprehensive treatment plan and everything with sarcomas also, but how do you know, is it like a survival rate of sarcomas and what it actually looks like? I know there's so many different types of sarcomas, so it's hard to probably generalize a single, you know, description or number or anything, but how would you characterize it?
Well, you know, you're exactly right. There's so many different sarcoma types, and then patients also are at different stages of disease, early stage, metastatic widespread sarcomas. And so it's you can't really put a number on sarcoma in general, but in any sarcoma type, there are long-term survivors.
Oh.
At any stage, there are long-term survivors. In some situations, it may be a small percentage, but there are long-term survivors with metastatic sarcomas that, you know, gives us all hope. And even when I see a newly diagnosed patient with metastatic sarcoma, we discuss some small possibility of cure.
Mm-hmm.
It's low, don't get me wrong, but there is a for most of the sarcoma types, there is a finite percentage of patients that live longer than 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so our goal is to try to do everything we can to put patients in that group so that they have the best chances, the best quality of life and quantity of life when we can do it. And I'd also just like to say that there are so many new therapies on the horizon that patients are living longer and longer all the time. We have targeted therapies such as these kinase inhibitors that we use for a number of different sarcomas, such as GI stromal tumor, tenosynovial giant cell, dermatofibrosarcoma. These kinase inhibitors shrink the tumors markedly in over 80% of patients in most cases.
Oh, wow.
And then we're also chemotherapy, standard conventional chemotherapy that's been around forever, is works really well in some patients. And now we're developing metabolic inhibitors that inhibit critical metabolic enzymes within the cancer cell that are mutated. Mm-hmm. And we're also discovering from work at Sylvester that patients with cutaneous angiosarcoma have very, very strong responses and clinical benefit from immunotherapy. Therapies that bind to the cancer cell and remove the camouflage so that the patient's own immune system can attack the cancer cells.
Oh, wow. I think, yeah, you've done a very well job. Like, very interesting, all this stuff. I mean, I know just even in 10 years, in the past 10 years, we've come very far in capabilities. And this is a very ambitious type of question I'm about to ask, but have you ever, do you think a cure is ever, like, a really successful cure is ever, you know, possible?
Well, yes. I mean, already some patients appear to be cured. It's a small percentage, like I said, but there are, in most sarcoma types, there are a percentage of patients who even have advanced disease, like when it metastatic disease that has spread to other organs, there is a percentage of those patients that are long-term survivors already. We just have to do research to better understand why some patients get these great responses and live for so long and why other patients don't. And then we also need to continue doing laboratory research and clinical trials to bring these discoveries into the clinic. One of the areas we're very excited about is called cellular therapy, where we take T cells or NK cells from the patient's immune system out of the blood, and we can actually expand them outside of the patient and then stimulate them against antigens that are on the tumor cell. And we can train the immune system in some situations to attack the tumor cells in this cellular therapy type model. And so to me, this seems perhaps the most promising because it's specific to the patient's own tumor, and it involves an immune system that that has memory and can replicate itself within the patient to continue to attack the tumor.
Oh, wow. I mean, yeah, it's pretty amazing what we're able to do, or what we're soon able to do, the technology that's really improving and developing. I think that's really where, yeah, I think that's a great place to end, actually. I think that we can be, I think the future actually has a lot in store for what we can do, and it's very pleasing and very promising to see what's going on. And I really appreciate you taking your time to really explain this and talk and, you know, tell us about it. So do you have anything else you would like to add, or is that it?
I would just agree with you that cancer and sarcoma specifically is a devastating disease. And through my career, I've seen great outcomes and not good outcomes. And what keeps me motivated is trying to get great outcomes for all of my patients. Mm-hmm. And that's why at Sylvester, we're very active in education, in laboratory research, translational research, clinical research, and really trying to to advance the field more rapidly than has been in the past.
Mm. And I think I speak for everyone when I say, like, I'm really, and probably everyone's really appreciative of your work and the contributions that you and other doctors and professionals, you know, researchers are making. I mean, it's really amazing. And yeah, it's really impressive. So yeah, thank you.